This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. What a week in WMRA news. We'll have stories about picking up the pieces and moving forward in Charlottesville after last weekend's violence. We'll also look ahead to tomorrow's partial solar eclipse in our area and how to safely watch it with some tips from our favorite local astronomer, Chanel Varani. And next in our Women of Interest series, midwife Misty Ward, a real rebel. But first, Charlottesville's police department is again under heavy criticism. After last month's KKK rally, some blamed the police for taking an over-militarized, aggressive approach towards protesters. Well, now some are saying the police went too far in the other direction and in many instances of disorder and violence did nothing. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini reports.
On Monday afternoon, City Police Chief Al Thomas held a brief press conference at City Space. He pointed out several times that the alt-right crowd did not follow the plans, forcing the police to adapt. He also said a hotline was put in place to help investigate into what's happened on Saturday.
We're still receiving reports of assaults and additional crimes, and we're working with our state and local partners to investigate thoroughly any criminal or civil rights violations that may have occurred this past weekend that have not yet been reported.
City Council member Kristen Zekas felt threatened by the alt-right crowd.
Yes, I was at the morning service and the march to McGuffey Park, and then was at McGuffey Park. You know, I feel like our city was under attack. People came to threaten what we're trying to do here.
Beyond this, narratives differ between Al Thomas and people who were part of the counter-protest.
Throughout the entire weekend, Virginia State Police, Charlottesville Police Department intervened to break up fights and altercations among those in attendance at the rally site. We had to send our forces to multiple locations to deal with a number of disturbances in and around the downtown area. It took probably an hour to gain control of the streets. We had groups that were moving constantly. We were following a number of groups, ensuring that they were being peaceful, but it was a challenge.
Here's a take of Casey Landrum, who works at Charlottesville's Thomas Jefferson Health District and who was part of the counter-protest as well.
And it seemed like, no matter what we did, time after time, we just kept getting assaulted and attacked. And how come these guys were able to come here fully armed, ready for war? The cops showed up after each time something happened. They were not present.
Janet Johnson, a co-worker of Landrum, talks about the police being intimidating towards their nonviolent group.
It was snipers on the rooftops of some of the buildings, and they had guns pointed down towards us.
Back at McGuffey Park, Landrum talks about an encounter with heavily armed white nationalists threatening their group as they passed by the park.
But he threatens this guy, they spit on this woman, and we ask the police officer who's standing right there, what are you going to do? And he's standing behind a barrier, and he's like, I can't do anything right now. That side of the barrier is Charlottesville Police Department. This side of the barrier is where I'm responsible. You are literally 10 feet away from somebody being assaulted, and you're doing nothing. And then he goes, have fun today.
Asked if he had any regrets in not having his officers better prepared, Al Thomas answered one thing.
Absolutely, I have regrets. We lost 3 lives.
Do you regret your actions and your decisions that day?
I explain what our regrets are. We regret this tragic day. We regret that we had a tragic outcome and we lost lives.
Casey Landrum was there when Heather Heyer lost her life. She was attending to her wounds.
We rotated her and they start doing compressions and making sure that we can give some kind of life-saving aid to her while we're holding her wounds at the bottom. And up come the cops and they're screaming in my face, get away from her, clear the area. And I said, I'm sorry, we can't go. I have to stay here. She's dying. And they actually told the volunteer medics to stop and leave. And I was like, why would you do that until there was a secure pass-off?
And that's what I didn't understand. When they came like they were getting ready to start shooting. We're now screaming for medic, and you come pointing a gun.
We actually had one of the reverends step into the street and stop a police officer and say, you're going to have to let us handle our people, man, because you're just not doing it.
Right.
And he started corralling people because the cops were being violently threatening to a bunch of people who were just brutalized.
Here's another declaration of Al Thomas during his press conference.
We tried to give the individuals in the crowd who wanted to leave, we wanted to make sure that they were able to leave safely. We facilitated that process. We had a number of individuals who chose to remain and cause violence.
This is another claim challenged by Johnson.
When I wanted to go to my car, and I told them that I wanted to go to my car, and they threatened to say that if I was going to my car, I was going to get arrested. Where were they when they could have escorted me to my car? Could have said, well, here's the route you can take or something. But it was, if you walk by yourself or if you walk with a group of three or more, you're going to get arrested. So I had no choice. I was stuck.
I'm just really, really, really let down by our institutions locally. And I think a lot of this was preventable.
City Council member Zekas tries to find a silver lining to it all.
We certainly are capable of having spirited disagreements among ourselves, and there are things that are, you know, problems in our city, and we work very hard to try to deal with those and certainly fall short sometimes. And to have people come from outside and just attack us like that, it's very traumatic. And I'm hoping that, you know, if anything good can come out of this, it will be, you know, that we're determined to kind of figure out how to move forward together.
For WMRA News, I am Marguerite Gallerini.
Also, on Monday, the Jefferson School's African American Heritage Center hosted a community conversation to talk about Saturday's violence in Charlottesville and how to move forward. Marguerite was there, too.
I want to start by just asking us all to just have a moment of silence, and I want us to reflect on the lives that were lost.
The Heritage Center in Charlottesville organized a community conversation moderated by Karen Waters Wicks. The panelists came from various organizations, such as the Office of Human Rights, the Blue Ribbon Commission on Race, Monuments and Memorials for the City of Charlottesville, Black Lives Matter, and from the city's clergy collective. The evening revolved around coming together as a community, discussing how to help children of color succeed in school, and about making it clear that white nationalists are not welcome in the city of Charlottesville. Then, a surprise followed.
We are going to ask you to do some work. We're going to break you into small groups. We're going to pass out pens and papers. And what this night is all about is understanding where we have been, but more importantly, hearing from you about where you want to go. What do we need to do next?
This sparked lively conversations about the weekend's events between people who all needed to share their stories in the process of finding peace. Some of the recommendations of the night: compiling stories so as to know what truly happened, and reaching out to minorities to ask them how we can better help as a larger community.
Among the many groups that descended on Charlottesville last weekend for Saturday's rally of white supremacists, a collection of faith leaders from around the country stood together to provide solace and solidarity in the midst of chaos. WMRA's Faith Pinu has this story about how the Episcopal Church responded to events in Charlottesville and how it is addressing issues of race in general.
The night before protests and violence broke out on Charlottesville streets last Saturday, a group of clergy members and churchgoers gathered together in St. Paul's Memorial Episcopal Church to prepare for the weekend's events. As the people sang and prayed indoors, a growing group of alt-right protesters gathered just across the street at the University of Virginia's Thomas Jefferson Rotunda, gearing up for the next day's planned rally. The Reverend Elaine Ellis Thomas, associate rector at St. Paul's Memorial, helped organize the prayer meeting for Christians from all over the country.
There was a lot of noise from across the street and people from over there coming to us to get away from the violence that was there, or coming to get help if they could. There were times when we had to lock our doors and keep people in place because it was not safe for some of our people to leave if they were parked in the direction of the University of Virginia. So we ended up letting people out one of our side doors towards the back and encouraging them to go out in groups.
The meeting of protesters and counter-protesters at UVA Friday night foreshadowed the violent and fatal clashes that would take place downtown the next day. And the prayer meeting was telling of what kind of role the church would take as the weekend unfolded. Thomas said several people from her congregation and members of the interfaith group gathered that night showed up to counter-protest. Others decided the best way to respond to the rally was to pray.
We determined that having a mass prayer meeting the night before, reminiscent of the civil rights gatherings, the night before there would be a march or a demonstration. Dr. King would come and preach, and the people would pray and sing and gird themselves up for what lay ahead. So it was in that spirit that we had this prayer meeting on Friday evening at St. Paul's Memorial Church.
Historically, churches have not always chosen one side when issues of race and justice arise. As far back as the Civil War, churches in the North offered platforms for abolitionists, such as Frederick Douglass, while in the South, Confederates and pro-slavery supporters, such as Jefferson Davis, spoke from the pulpit. President Abraham Lincoln, speaking to both Union and Confederate supporters in his second inaugural address, acknowledged, quote, "Both read the same Bible and pray to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other." As Father Daniel Robayo of Emmanuel Episcopal Church in Harrisonburg said, the church has been split in its message in more recent years, too.
The church was involved clearly in perpetuating Jim Crow in the South, but the church was also involved in dismantling it. So we've been both part of the problem and the solution.
These days, the Episcopalians are taking a stronger stance on one side. The National Episcopal Church issued a project back in May entitled Becoming Beloved Community. This proposal for, quote, racial reconciliation harkens back to Martin Luther King's vision for a more just society, both in name, the beloved community, and in purpose. The plan outlines a range of initiatives, from taking a churchwide census, to hosting story-sharing events, to helping formerly incarcerated people re-enter society. Bishop Mark Bourlakis of the Episcopal Diocese of Southwestern Virginia plans to host talks on racial reconciliation throughout the fall. He said his hope with the talks is to bring people from different parts of the community together to engage with each other.
We need to be talking to each other so that when things like this happen, we know each other, we can come together with each other, and we cannot assume the worst, but assume the best about each other.
Speaking just one day after the violence in Charlottesville, Robayo of the Emmanuel Church in Harrisonburg said now is an important time for churches to seriously look at issues of race and justice and understand what is going on in their communities.
Three people were killed yesterday for no reason in Charlottesville. And we really need to come to terms with and address the deep-seated distrust that exists in our nation, in our communities, around race, around belonging, around opportunity. And not doing anything is to do something.
While the Episcopal Church has a reputation for being one of the more liberal denominations, Bishop Bourlakis said the purpose of the Becoming Beloved Community plan is to transform hearts and minds, not to start a political debate.
We don't have to agree with everybody. We have to believe that everybody's made in God's image, and everybody has a dignity that needs to be respected, regardless of whether you are in the same political party as me, went to the same university as me, go to a different church than I do. I use a different barbecue sauce. I mean, whatever it is.
Local churches are beginning to respond to the National Episcopal Church's call to action in different ways. Some congregations will use the opportunity to revisit their history and understand the church's position on race over the years. Some will help fundraise for local historically black colleges and universities. And, as in the case of St. Paul's Memorial Church in Charlottesville, some will just be there to offer a place of prayer and song as chaos rages on outside. For WMRA News, I'm Faith Pinu.
You'll find all of our Charlottesville coverage from the past week and before at WMRA.org. All right, so if you're not one of those hardcore umbrophiles traveling south or west to see the solar eclipse tomorrow from somewhere in the path of totality, you can still enjoy it from right here in the valley. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz reports.
We're going to have a great show.
But first, a warning about watching the eclipse.
You should not look at the sun, ever, without approved glasses.
That's Chanel Verani, director of the John C. Wells Planetarium at James Madison University and host of WMRA's Our Island Universe. He's published an eclipse primer on the planetarium's website.
Here in the valley, the moon will block out about 86% of the solar disk. The temperature will drop. It will get dark. Stars may appear. You will certainly see Jupiter and Venus appear in your daytime sky. Nocturnal animals will be confused because it'll appear dark to them, so you may hear crickets chirping.
The eclipse on Monday will take place here from 1:13 until 4:01, with the most dramatic coverage around 2:40 and lasting for just over 2.5 minutes. The central branch of the Massanutten Regional Library is giving away a very limited supply of viewing glasses on Friday and Saturday afternoons, one per person, but Verani says there's a great alternative.
One of the neatest, coolest things to do is actually not to buy solar eclipse glasses and to make your own pinhole projection. They're safe, it's easy, it's fun, and when you do the activity, not only do you see a nice solar disk that you can watch the eclipse, you might even see large sunspot groups if there are any sunspots, all for the price of whatever a half-gallon milk carton costs.
Links to these instructions, a list of approved makers and online vendors of viewing glasses, and much more are at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clammer-Kurtz.
Midwives have delivered babies for centuries, but in America, they mostly went underground as childbirth became medicalized in the 20th century. So, like many other midwives these days, Misty Ward, owner and founder of Brookhaven Women's Health and Natural Birthing Center outside Harrisonburg, is a bit of a rebel, part of a growing movement to demedicalize childbirth. For the next installment of our Women of Interest series, WMRA's Jessie Nadler has her profile.
What you're hearing right now is the sound of childbirth moments after delivery at Brookhaven Natural Birthing Center just outside Harrisonburg. The mom delivered her baby, her third child, in a water bath. If the room sounds raucous, that's because it is. 10 people, not including Brookhaven staff, attended this birth. Grandmas, big brothers, children. The parents call their two older children over to the bathtub to introduce them to the newest member of the family.
Come, say what it is.
Daddy's
okay?
Gonna uncover, and you and Roman are gonna say what it is.
It's a girl! It's a girl! It's a girl!
A birth is by definition a lively event, and Brookhaven founder and owner, midwife Misty Ward, she actually caught this baby as it came out, likes to retain as much of that rough and tumble joy as possible.
The birth center philosophy is it's not a mini hospital, it's a maxi house.
Births aren't supposed to be clinical around here. Moms can invite their entire extended families into the birthing suites with them if they want. They want to eat a ham sandwich? Go ahead. The fully stocked kitchen at the heart of Brookhaven is specifically for laboring moms and their families.
So we have grandmas in here baking birthday cakes for the baby. Sometimes we have dads. I mean, we've had a guy make steak for all of our staff. That was a really good one.
The idea behind midwife-led maternity care is that women do better when they're able to deliver in a natural, home-like setting at their own pace, often in a water bath. And research seems to back this up. Doctors in the United Kingdom recommend that healthy women with low-risk pregnancies are actually better off staying out of the hospital. It results in lower rates of interventions, from cesareans to episiotomies. This is totally anathema in the United States, where the vast majority of women have hospital births. 60% have an epidural. 32% are cesarean deliveries, more than double the World Health Organization's target of 10 to 15%. The whole experience is invasive and sped up, says Ward.
Women are created to do this, and they can do it with the right support. And I just feel like the hospital's failing them in supporting them through a natural process. It's a lot of the things that happen to women in a hospital that creates the need for the epidural.
Ward is part of a growing minority who think women are better off going au naturel. Around 9% of all births in the U.S. are led by midwives, up from about 3% in years past. When she first opened in 2010, she was delivering 40 babies a year. Now she's up to 100. More hospitals have linked up with midwives to meet the growing demand, but Brookhaven is still the only public freestanding natural birthing center in the area. She recently celebrated her 500th natural delivery.
Witnessing a baby come out of a woman. I mean, honestly, the fact that it fit, the fact that it worked, the fact that she was alive when it was all over. Like, honestly, it's amazing that our bodies can create another human being. And even now, 500 plus births into it and gone through the process myself, I'm still just in awe of like what women's bodies can do. We make people.
Midwifery was the standard for delivering babies throughout history and one of the few occupations open to women. But in the United States, the practice was pushed underground and demonized as unsafe and backward as the medicalization of childbirth took over. By 1950, almost all U.S. babies were delivered by doctors, male doctors, in a hospital. Midwifery didn't go anywhere. It was just illegal. So it tended to draw women like Ward, who had a bit of a rebel spirit. It wasn't until 2006 that midwifery in Virginia became legal again.
I kind of wanted to call the shots, and I didn't want to be employed by someone else. You know, I wanted to own my own business. I'm just really motivated in that way.
Because there were so few professional midwives in Virginia when she first started, She apprenticed for months at a time in places such as Senegal, the Dominican Republic, and Texas along the border. It required leaving her own children, she now has three, for long periods of time with her mother.
The 9 weeks that I was in Texas, I didn't see them, but I would write them a letter every single day.
Ward's mother, long a home birth skeptic, became a champion of midwifery after witnessing Ward deliver her second child in her mom's own bathtub.
She actually said, "Wow, Misty, like what you just got, every woman deserves." And she said, "I feel like I was robbed of that experience," because her own births were traumatic and horrible and scary. And she was terrified of me giving birth in her home. But then after, she just like became my number one supporter.
But not everyone in the community was so enthusiastic. And home births are not recommended for high-risk pregnancies. When Ward went before the County Board of Supervisors in 2010 to apply for a zoning permit to open her business, she was reminded again that the medical establishment still had issues with her profession.
Then the board said, "Is there anyone here who opposes this?" And all of a sudden I heard, "I do. I do. I do. I do."
Four medical professionals associated with Rockingham Memorial Hospital got up to voice their objections. Ward, ever the fighter, reminded the board that she was licensed by the Virginia Board of Medicine to practice anywhere in the state. If they didn't give her the permit, she'd just open in another location.
Then they were all like, "Oh, good point. We can't stop you from practicing."
They realized it was a turf war and gave her the permit. And after a few bumps, she says she now has a great working relationship with the hospital, which leads to one of the biggest misconceptions about a natural birthing center.
"We're not going to handcuff you to the bed and say you have to do this without drugs here, bite this stick. You know, if women want to have an epidural, we'll take them to the hospital, you know."
10% of her laboring clients end up doing exactly that. And for the record, she's not anti-epidural at all. She just thinks they're overused. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
Support for WMRA's Women of Interest series comes from F&M Bank, a local independent community bank since 1908 with locations throughout the Shenandoah Valley. Online at fmbankva.com.
And you can learn more about Misty Ward and our Women of Interest series at wmra.org. Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to support our news coverage, go to WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. All our stories are archived at that website. Be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio. And follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. And don't forget to keep up each morning with the WMRA Daily, our new weekday early morning news podcast. Listen at WMRA.org and subscribe to the podcast there. Come on, you know I have to put in a plug for my podcast. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and Morning Edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.